Dear Venerable Sisters and Brothers, Dhamma Friends, today also we are going to take time for the day's Dhamma Talk. May you all settle down for the Dhamma Talk and give the consent with three times Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ කතමේ ද්වේ ධම්මා පරිඤ්ඤය නාමංච රූපං ජාති තී ය වෙන්බල් බන්තේ ධම්මා And sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, we have taken the particular sutta known as Dasuttara Sutta as the main topic for this series. And so far we have delivered two talks. Today is the third one. And we are proceeding along the group of two. So Venerable Sariputta is introducing the third topic in this group of two, which two things are to be thoroughly known. That is a question, or that's a kind of an introduction to the subject. And then Venerable Sariputta himself is giving the answer, the name and the matter. Sometimes it has been translated as mind and the body. So, when and where someone is mindful and clear, with clear comprehension and clear awareness, that is the most important thing, most helpful thing for one to achieve the spiritual task, he or she has to pay the attention to the body, one's own body as the primary object. And with the help of this body as the primary object, one has to develop the calmness or concentration and the wisdom or insight. So we are being human beings, using our human body as the object of meditation to develop the calm and insight. And when and where we are proceeding along this line, that means when and where we are progressing with mindfulness and progressing along this clear comprehension, our understanding of the body with respect to concentration meditation, with respect to insight will be increasing. In simple terms, we can say the body becomes one's own best friend. More and more you try to be here and now, try to understand the body, under what circumstances, under what body posture you become more calm and collected, under what posture you can develop insight or see the body as it is, so it increases as and when you keep the body in view with or try to be mindful with the body. That is what we call this spiritual activity or meditation or mindfulness. So when it is happening, if it is happening without a hitch, without a problem, then you have to be careful or you have to give attention about this thing that one must be thoroughly known, that is the separation between the name aspect and the matter aspect, or mind aspect and the body aspect. Even in the normal common sense, the mind and the matter is a known aspect in our life, and during the civilization, during the history of our civilization, the religious people took the mind as their subject matter, and the physical development or economic, social and political people, they took the body as the main aspect. So far they were developing in two directions. Whenever you are talking about the materialistic gain and the development, you tend to neglect the mind aspect. And whenever you are become spiritual and more towards the mind aspect, sometimes it complain your physical development or your materialistic development will be hindered. So therefore they were going in two different directions. But very recently only, the scientific understanding of the mind or mind science, and together with this understanding, how to gain the materialistic development or peace of mind, they are now highly in the discussion, specifically in the USA and other countries. So therefore, now we have a fresh look. We are looking from different avenues towards this mind and body. And yet another aspect of it is to understand or to realize, to emancipate the mind and the body is enough. There is no supreme being beyond the mind and the body. So when and where someone is inquiring, thoroughly knowing about the body and the mind, that is enough for one to understand or one to emancipate. So therefore, Venerable Sariputta's hint that the only thing you must know thoroughly is your own mind and the body, or your own name and the matter. There is nothing beyond that. And the way to verify that is, when and where you contemplate on the mind and the body, whatever the scrutiny, whatever the detail peeping into, search into that, you never find in this insight meditation or in this concentration meditation something called supreme being. Everything available is come within these two categories, mind and the body. So therefore, it is advisable someone to be thorough on the mind and the body. More and more you go there, you find everything and anything can be explained through the mind and the body. And when and where you are not mindful, you are negligent to the your mind and body, then you may be believing, you may be eccentric on other aspect, then the complications happen, then the frustration happen, then the tension happen. So therefore, even not for full time, if you can allocate a certain amount of time to understand, to be friendly with your mind and body, it is a kind of a release for this frustration or this tension. So that is something one can verify within this life. And that is why Venerable Sariputta is telling, when and where you become mindful and clearly comprehending, when and where you are developing the concentration and the wisdom, the next step is to look into the matter, look into the phenomena in terms of the mind and the body or name and the matter. So to start the subject look at from its outlook, you have to understand any phenomena, any experience you are confronted with is not a unity, it is not a single fold, at least it has two lobes. It's an agglomeration of at least two parts, mental part and the physical part, or name and the matter. So therefore, if you wish to understand any phenomena, any event, any experience, you have to understand it is not a unity, it's not a one unit, it's an agglomeration of the mental aspect and the physical aspect. So therefore, when and where are the Theravadin commentators going to explain about the insight knowledges. First and foremost insight knowledge known as Nama Rupa Parichyeda Jnana or discrimination between the name and the matter, mind and the body. So, specifically in the Theravada tradition, whenever we are being taught in the seven stages of purification, your very start, entrance into the subject of insight is try to understand the phenomena, try to understand the experience, not as a one single unit, but from the mind point of view and the body point of view. So, if you are with the quick wit, if you are with very sharp understanding on the theory, then you may be better off when and where the concentration happen, when and where the insight happen, whether it is developing in the healthy way or progressing in a good way, you can understand as and when you know the mental aspect of the phenomena and the physical aspect of the phenomena. So, if you do not get this practical hint, if you do not get this thorough theoretical understanding, this separation of the mind and the matter sometimes make a hell of a complication in the yogis and the frustration in the yogis. So therefore, in the question and answers, lot of yogis just get the word meaning. What does it mean by the mental aspect of the phenomena and the physical aspect of the phenomena? And they can't comprehend it, they can't grasp it. So therefore, they are just chasing behind, but with no much of a practical touch. So let us start. How can we incorporate this theory on the mind and matter together with our experience, together with our meditation? There we have to appoint a primary object. With respect to a primary object only, we can make this theoretical understanding more pragmatic. So, for example, if you are when you are in sitting meditation, if you take the breath as the primary object, when and where your mindfulness is face to face with the breath, that means it is not other directed, not wandering off, not thinking, not listening, not daydreaming, not carried away by another painful feeling. But if you are face to face with the breath, you may feel the breath. For example, the in-breath, the where it is touching, is this touch happy like a cold or heat or long or short, pleasant or unpleasant? All these aspects we call it the physical aspect of the breath, the heatness, cold, and it appear longer rubbing and the shorter rubbing. And difference between the in-breath rubbing and the out-breath rubbing. So when and where this information going to accumulate, or if you know how to look into this information, then you may understand this kind of this set of information. We name it as the in-breath. This set of information we name it as out-breath. The naming aspect or nomenclature we call as the mind, and the physical phenomena, the heat, cold, rubbing sensation, long, short, they appear like the physical part. So when I go to Panditarama, when I go to Myanmar and go to the Panditarama, it was a very fresh kind of teaching. When you are presenting your interview reports, you have to first appoint your primary object. You have to tell to the teacher, this is what I am going to talk. That is to say, I am in seeing and I am taking the rising and falling or in breath and out breath as the primary object. But of course, you have to understand in your common sense. When you go to a Mahasi center, they are always pressing or they are always pushing you to the rising and falling rather than the breath. So in my case, I went with certain acquaintance with the in-breath and out-breath. So whenever I am presenting, my teacher is objecting me, no, you have to go back to the rising and falling. So there was a kind of a transitional period. Ultimately, I surrender myself. Some or the other look into the rising and falling and write my report on the rising and falling rather than breath. Don't make it a complication for you. I am not prescribing you all either in breath and out breath or rising and falling. I keep it open. Whatever the phenomena, when you sit, when the mind is calm and collected, whatever the phenomena arising, you have to appoint it as the primary object. It is up to the yogi. I have taken the in-breath and out-breath as an example. So you have to tell the teacher, I am sitting, I am going to talk on the breath. When I am in the in-breath, these are the things I experience. It's a rubbing sensation or at the tip of the nostril or at the top of your upper lip or whether it is cool or heat. And then you name it as, you label it as in-breath. Then we are explaining the out-breath. When compared to the in-breath, out-breath is warmer or longer or shorter or in the same place or other place, and that I name as out-breath. So the physical aspects is what you call the materiality or the bodily aspect or matter. The labeling and the naming as in-breath and out-breath and recognition separately is called name as mind aspect, the name. So once that is done, once that is understood, the Mahasi system is very, very easy. Some or the other, if you can't grasp it, if you do not know how to report it, then there won't be any communication between the teacher and the student and dragging. So therefore, this thorough understanding on the mind and the body is important. And in the Dhamma talks, these masters, Burmese masters, are clearly indicating, whenever you are reporting, report to the short to the point. Clear and precisely. The other things you wish to talk about is no value, no sense for the interviews. So therefore, learning how to report specifically with respect to the mind and the body, with respect to the name and the matter, we can say 50% of our meditation. So therefore, not only the meditation, not only you are the striving, your diligence, your vigilant, but the communication, very important, otherwise very difficult for teacher to gauge you. Not only the teacher, even you yourself cannot be precise. You cannot verify the experience. That is why the understanding of the name and the matter or the mind and the body become important. So therefore, when you are writing the interview report, you have to write in the given format or in a presented way, then very easily the other person can understand how much he or she clearly, discreetly explained about the primary object, the in-breath mode and the out-breath mode. When you are walking, how do you experience the left leg and the right leg? The pressure, the place you feel, and hardness, movement and the steadiness, cool and warmness. These things are under your very nose, what is happening. And if you are sharp enough, if you are diligent enough, if you are mindful enough, the mind will pick this essence, and it is called Dhamma essence. And if you are to observe and put into the report, that means next day your meditation will start from that point you stopped yesterday, because the progress is catching. So therefore in walking meditation also, you have to thorough in reporting, as well as while you are doing walking meditation, try to pick the intrinsic nature. It appear, and it is been taught in the Mahasi system, as the shape and the manner. When you are keeping the leg, so to say, the left leg, how do you feel? Do you think it as touching of two plates, or steady earth is touched by moving leg, or warmer soil is touched by cooler soil, or warmer leg is touched by a cooler soil? That kind of thing you have to understand, because the touch never happen unless otherwise two surfaces come in together. So therefore the breath, in breath or left leg or left step, it means that two things come in contact with. Whenever it is come in contact with, one part you call me, the other part you call not me. Upadhinna, anupadhinna. So the beginner start with the feeling of what you call me. When you keep the leg on the ground, you can't feel the ground. You can feel your leg. You can feel that if the ground is warmer, leg is cooler. And the ground is harder, leg is softer. If the ground is softer, leg is harder. So this comparative understanding, when and where it is happening, you are the only person can be aware of it, and that is a very clear indication, very clear way of verification. Mind is mindful. Now you are really avenue to the subject, to the phenomena, to the experience, and how many thought moments or how many steps you can keep this discriminated mind and matter and maintain the balance. And when you go there, the momentum it is gathering, the acceleration it is gathering, unbelievable. If you can keep step after step, knowing this is the mental aspect of it, this is the physical aspect of it, this is the difference between the left leg and the right leg, and this is the difference between first left leg and the second left leg, third left leg, like it is going to gather the momentum. It is not depending on the male-femaleness. It's not depending on the you are a learned person or not. You are not depending on whether you are a young person or middle or old age. They are exactly the same, but it depends on your vigilance, your diligence, your sharpness, when and where it is happening to pick them. And even if you know how to pick, but if you do not know how to report, your encouragement or your contentment will be lacking. So not only you must pick then and they are red-handed, you must report in the interview reports, then the person listening is very easy to understand the vigilance, the diligence, the clear comprehension, and not imaginary. It is the reality. And that once given the confidence, the yogi, the practitioner, gathering the momentum. So therefore, when you are meditating, early part of your meditation as a beginner, it's an utter wastage of time. It's so much of trial and error. You don't know where to focus. You don't know what to report. You don't know what to pick. But there is no shortcut. Only the trial and error method. So there should have a rapport between the teacher and the student. And you must try as much as possible true to type information. This is what I do. This is what it happened to me. And when and where you come into the correct track, very easy for the teacher to promote that and not to promote the other things. So therefore, this sakaccha or interview is very, very important in this meditation. And according to the Mahasi system, they daily give an interview. If possible, they give a personal interview. In Mitrigal also, when I started, we limited the number of yogis to 40, because otherwise I can't give personal interviews. But when the number of yogis increases, it happened me to suggest about the group interview, the manner that we are following, and some of the yogis were not happy. They thought they lost the chance to meet personally. But now we have conducted, as far as the Mitrigala back in Sri Lanka is concerned, more than 60 retreats with this group interview. And we are advising the yogis, these are the things you must look into while you are meditating, as far as you are mindful. And these are the things you have to report, and report in such a way, the labeling, the naming is one aspect, that is the mental aspect. With particular to that label, what did you experience, the physicality, the materialistic part, the bodily part, and if they come as a package, easily you can proceed and you may learn the art of reporting. And that is directly related to your confidence, directly related to your not entertaining of doubts. Otherwise, if you are not sharp enough in this reporting, even though you are a dedicated yogi, even though you are spending so much of time, meditation is not catching, experience is not gathering. So therefore, Venerable Sariputta is telling, when and where you have the mindfulness and the clear comprehension, when and where the attention is focused to your body in terms of concentration and the insight, this is the sap, is the juice, is the essence you have to pick. And when and where you are to present this contact, your experience, your phenomena, you have to have two aspects, the nomenclature, the understanding and labeling and naming of the object, and the physical part, what you experience. So when and where this is improving, you can say, the soon you sit, when and where the mindfulness is focused, the time period that you are losing will be reduced, and quickly you can go into the object of meditation, and you are going to gain so much of essence, so much of sap of the meditation. So it is very, very interesting, very important, and that is how the present day computer came into being. And each and every data, each bit is separated one from the other, and they are stored in a decoded manner, and they will bring back in the recorded way. That's exactly the way our brain is working. So therefore, whenever we see either shape or the manner. And for that shape and the manner, we put a label, and it goes and store in our memory. When you see the same shape and the same manner, the name come into our mind, oh, this is the what I see yesterday. Oh, this is a new thing. And we need the labeling for that. Likewise, it is happening. So it is happening in multivarious ways. So through hearing, through seeing, through smelling, to tasting, touching and thinking. So in order to introduce an apprentice or a beginner, the Buddha says, close your eyes. Don't entertain any kind of a visual object, specifically in your sitting meditation. And don't entertain any sounds. Don't entertain any smell, taste, touch. Yes, touch of the body. But reduce it to a one phenomena. If you are taking the in-breath and out-breath, you feel, you try to see the touch at the end of the nostril or on your top of your lip. And that does not indicate the other parts of the body is not emitting any kind of physical signs. There are. But you must understand this is recognized as primary object. So, when and where I have the ability, I focus my mindfulness clearly to this primary object, that is to say, the in-breath or out-breath, and you clearly pick the essence of physicality of the in-breath phenomena and name it as in-breath. When the out-breath happens, you understand that physicality, materiality of the out-breath and name it as out-breath and you are reporting. When you keep on going, whenever you become familiar with this in-breath and out-breath, that means the healthy development of your mindfulness, then you can understand the other parts of the body also always emitting so much of signals. For example, the pain in your leg, maybe slowly, slowly starting with a very tiny level and ultimately it come and become very, very powerful. So much so, you can't keep the track with the in-breath and out-breath. So when such a thing happen, yogi definitely consider it as a trouble, consider it as a distraction because your primary object is being challenged. So specifically those who have inclination to the concentration meditation, they consider this as a challenge and they become disheartened. But if you are just merely aware, the main thing that you have to understand, thoroughly you have to understand is the mentality and physicality of the phenomena, that is of the pain for the moment, and maybe you are changing from your primary object at the in-breath and out-breath to the pain. But the pain itself is happening only through the mentality and physicality. So if you can peacefully, with the calmness of your mind, can focus your attention, or when the attention is dragged to the pain, still see the pain as a nama-rupa, as a mind and the body, and if you can, without hatred, without disappointment, if you can explain the pain, that's one of the benefits you gain through the mindfulness on the in-breath and out-breath. But it's very difficult to convey this message to the yogi because they start with the hatred. They become disheartened. They think mindfulness on the in-breath and out-breath must be continuous for the whole throughout the hour. Whenever sound happens, whenever pain happens, whenever thinking happens, they get disturbed. Because they don't know, the main thing is to understand the mind and the body aspect or nama rupa of the phenomena, not to adhere it to the single phenomena or single object or your primary object. So, when and where you learn theoretically understanding the what you must know thoroughly is not only the in-breath and out-breath, even though you have selected this as the primary object. When there are some events that will be overcome by a pain, by a sound, by a thought, whatever may be, whatever it is happening, each and every contact has three lobes, the name aspect and the mental aspect. And the day you can explain your pain, just like the in-breath and out-breath, and you have to report the pain appeared and it was very slight and subtle at the beginning, and once while it is continuing, it came surpassing or suppressing the breath. So my pain is now on the right leg. I feel it as a piercing pain or burning pain or twisting pain, and it is in a one single point, or it is happening in a many, many points, or it is moving, or it's one single place. Likewise, when and where you try to explain this mental aspect and the mind aspect and the matter aspect of the pain, now your attitude to the pain is completely must be different. That is what we call the choiceless awareness. If you have a choice to say throughout the meditation, I must have the in-breath and out-breath and how to keep the in-breath and out-breath intact and how to suppress the pain, that's 70%, 80% of the questions usually happening in the question and answer session. That is because they have a special attraction to the primary object or special attraction to the concentration, special attraction to the calmness of the mind. But they are not ready, they are not radical enough, they are not prepared to see, to be thorough on the name aspect and the mind aspect, the matter aspect of the whatever the phenomena. So that hurdle is a very big one and you have to have it. So therefore, whenever you are to see the phenomena in terms of the materiality and mentality, your attitudes to the phenomena, internal, external, sitting, walking and day-to-day and even non-monastic way of life, you will be little patient. You'll be little patient. You are not rushing to get rid of pain. But instead, you may one day observe how much I can take the pain as the primary object at that moment, because naturally pain suppressed. The primary object, soka, was the breath, which is suppressed. Now the pain is there. How much I can pay that attention? So these are the basic points where personality traits are changing. Your likings and dislikings are changing. You become a new person. If the phenomena by itself is proving pain is the more important for the moment, not the breath, then you, without a grudge, if you can analyze the pain in terms of the mind and the matter, then you have a completely new approach. The thing is, you are not hating habitually the pain and you are not regretting habitually telling that you lost your primary object. The object will come according to the phenomena. Whatever it is happening, your main task is to see the two aspects, two lobes, the mind and the body separation, name and the matter separation, and then one day you will see, or you are bound to see, even right from the beginning in your meditation, sitting meditation, when you see in-breath and out-breath, when you see the mentality and metaphysicality of the in-breath and out-breath, pains are there. And sounds are there, thoughts are there, they are in the background. Because your attention, because your deliberation, because of your adverting of the mind, the breath is gross and you can see, but that does not indicate only the breath is there, there is no sound, there is no thought, there is no pain. They are there. But when you keep on observing the breath, they become slowly, slowly increasing. The pain become increasing. The sound become more irritating and the thinking and daydreaming starts. Two reasons. One is, as far as you observe the breath, the single object, your mind become monotonous. Mind become bored. On the primary object, and therefore the other objects sometimes appear more amplified, the pain, thoughts and sounds. Because in our whenever we have a day-to-day life without mindfulness, mind is jumping from to the other, one to the other like a mad monkey. There is no bookkeeping. There is no observation. So therefore, it is jumping from one to the other. Now due to your restrainment, now due to your focused attention, you try to keep the primary object in view with. When and where you become successful to keep the primary object in view with, there is a kind of a reaction, kind of a repulsion happening through the boredom, through the monotonous way. Ultimately, the breath becomes not very attractive. That may be one reason your pain, thoughts and sounds become more amplified. So therefore, I would put it this way: when and where you become mindful in your primary object, your sensitivity to the other objects increases. So therefore, other objects appear more multiplied or amplified way. It is not a distraction for your meditation. You have to consider this as an endowment, or it's a result of your meditation. So what will happen if you go prepared for this one? That is to say, while I am meditating, when I am successful with the in-breath and out-breath, or maybe you are in the walking meditation in the left leg and the right leg, when that is catching, there's a kind of another phenomena happening. The other objects, the secondary objects, appear more amplified. If you are not well instructed, if you do not know how to keep bookkeeping, you will definitely consider it as something negative and something distracting. But if you are well instructed, if you keep accounts and go prepared, 2-3 sittings time, 2-3 walking meditation time, you can see, you will observe, this is not your personal thing. This is a natural phenomena. When and where one thing is observed for longer time, it becomes bored, it becomes monotonous, and instead, the other thing becomes very prominent. And even then, even the prominent thing is going to suppress your primary object. If you are looking at that, the distracting object also, only through mind and matter, nama rupa, or mentality and physicality, now your approach is completely different. You are not hating it. Instead, take this as your almost primary object. And when it is happening, what happens is that also becomes distracted. Then again, you can come back to the primary object. This is a gift. This is an endowment. So, when and where something happens, blocking your way, distracting, don't react. Instead, use the same magnifying glass and see that pain also with the nothing but the pain, mind and the matter. Even a thought happens, even a sound happens, they also you can magnify and see. And when and where you give the full attention to that secondary object, which was the distraction, that also appeared to be disappearing, boring, monotonous, and you have a fresh chance to come back to the primary object. When you come back, you can see the primary object may be disturbed or undisturbed. Even after that distraction of the sound or the pain, if you manage to come back to the primary object, if the primary object appears exactly the same like you when you are leaving it, that means your mind stream of consciousness never get defiled. It's very, very worth calling mindfulness. Worth calling, you are very efficient. It has taken off but came back home. And you are to see primary object is just calm as ever. And then you can again start with that. Likewise, the observing the phenomena, primary object or secondary object, through the length of this body and mind separation, or nama-rupa separation, many, many benefits. One thing is you are not hating secondary object even if it is coming and disturbing. And the second thing is you go prepared. Whenever the mindfulness and the mind is face-to-face with one single object due to your diligent effort and precise aiming, these secondary objects sometimes become amplified. That's also possible. It is not your mistake. So if you go prepared, you can understand it. And then your main task is to see the secondary appearing object through this lens. And when and where it is manageable, you come back to the primary object. And you verify if the primary object is as calm as ever, this change has never defiled your stream of consciousness. If you are not managing in this way, you become hateful to the secondary object, you react it. And that is the point where you create defilements, your stream of consciousness become inferior, and you are succumbed to the situation. So therefore, Upandita Saido gave a formula. He says, before you go to the secondary object, if you know you are mindful of the primary object, and after tackling the secondary object, if you come back to the primary object and you verify it, then the prior secondary object never defile you. That means you know before also you are mindful, after also you are mindful, as far as at the beginning, at the end, if it is mindful, in between there is no defilements. So this is the way to nullify then and there defilements. It's a very tiny way, but take a long way. More and more you accumulate this skillfulness, you can learn the art of how to nullify the wrong habits or wrong tendencies, wrong likings and disliking, wrong personality traits. Let them happen, let them come. You make sure before that and after that I am mindful. I take the primary object as the pivotal point. I take the primary object as the benchmark or main thing. And when and where you come back and report to the primary object, you can see a lot of things can happen in between. Sounds can happen, thoughts can happen, pains can happen. Everything you look through this lens of mind and matter. Or name and matter, mind and body, name and matter, whatever may be. The in Pali it is called Nama Rupa. So when and where you learn Nama Rupa, the third benefit you get it is your familiarity with the primary object increases. Even it is distracted for a short period, again when you come back and accumulation of the experience can happen, then you can see more and more you come back to the primary object without a distraction, without a regret, without a self-criticism. You can understand what is happening to the primary object when you keep it, view it for a longer time. What happens is, if you are to observe the primary object for a longer time, with or without distraction, you can see its features, its shape and its manners are ever changing. If you look at quickly and look another thing, or if you give a very superficial kind of attention to the primary object, it appear like a permanent shapes and a permanent manners. But if you are to see continuously with or without distraction, then you can see primary object is evolving. When and where you observe the same thing again and again with the diligent effort and the precise aiming, you can see its stiffness, tension, its a heat, cold, shortness, longness is ever changing. So when the Buddha put that into Satipatthana Sutta, he give it in a kind of a common way. He says, when and where you know how to keep the primary object, view it for longer time, the longer in-breath later will appear shorter in-breath. Longer out-breath later appear as a short out-breath. That means the changing of the shape and the manner. So when and where this changing of the shape and the manner digested, understood, it's an early sign of impermanent notion. If you are a person have a permanent notion, you will expect the in-breath and out-breath to be exactly the same throughout your observation. If it is so, any kind of becoming subtle or shorter or unperceivability of the in-breath and out-breath be like a challenge. So that you have to get rid of by listening, by theoretical understanding, the any shape, any manner that you have detected in the early part of the in-breath and out-breath will be changing, will be replaced by other shapes and the manner, and that is only possible for a senior yogis, experienced people with the mindfulness. They also must go prepared, otherwise this is the phenomena of settling down and dwindling off and disappearance appear like a challenge. So therefore, more and more you to keep the one object in view with, within bracket you have to say with or without distraction, then you are bound to see they are changing their shapes and the manner. And that indicates quick glance, superficial observation, make our notion permanent. If you are to see the same object again and again for a long time, you are bound to see there is no permanent sight. There is no permanent feature. There is no permanent character. Everything is changing. Everything is volatile. So don't take it as a challenge. Don't take it as a mistake. Don't take it as your lack of mindfulness. And seriously, emphatically, I'm telling you, don't take it as a lack of concentration. Many people, when and where the object become changing or shape and the manner, they consider it's a lack of mindfulness and the lack of concentration. That is because they have not instructed well, or they have the inclination more to the samatha meditation or calm meditation. So therefore, they never expect any changes in the mentality and physicality of the primary object. But keep on practicing and keep on reporting your experience in the interviews, and keep on listening to the Dhamma talks, and keep on applying your diligent effort and the precise aiming mindfully, definitely you will see when and where you know how to tackle the secondary objects or distractions, your time period with the primary object will be naturally increasing, and then you must be prepared, whatever arising, to be accepted, to be accept choicelessly, rather than challenging its nature, challenging its changes, challenging its impermanent notion. So this is very, very important aspect. And only if you go prepared, if you are well thorough in the subject matter, then it appear like a progress. It appear like a encouragement. It appear like a contentment. If you go with the notion that object must be firm and not changing with the permanent notion, then your mind will be so much of in trouble, because you are not looking the object through the nama and rupa, or mind and the matter. Instead, you have your preconceived notions. Object must be like that, or this is liking and this is disliking. Under such circumstances, end result is the frustration. End result is the tension. So if you wish to keep your stream of consciousness as less amount of tension and the frustration, let the phenomena to happen. And phenomena, keep it open to be impermanent. And that impermanent also you will start to taste when and where you are observing the same object for a longer time. So this kind of cumulative effect, this much of a gathering of experience happen often, or in general we can say, for regular meditators or full-time meditators or residential meditators. Imagine if you are meditating 1 hour a day, and sometimes you are not regular also. Under such circumstances, this kind of a precipitation of the knowledge and deepening of the knowledge cannot happen. So each of us start with this kind of a part-time meditation way. But when and where it is going, when and where it is practicing, if you feel, if you get the feeling of this kind of evolution, then you must facilitate it. That is your prime duty. Give more time for meditation, listen to talks, report as much as possible, associate the people, those who are diligent and vigilant, and rather than the non-meditators. So these are the good things we get when we come to a residential retreat. Even then, I find some people are socializing. They are talking each other very relaxed way, and that is a very bad thing to see. Because we earn this place and the time is with so much of difficulties. But if you are not keeping up to the precepts, if you are not keeping up to the rules of compendiums, compendium rules, then you are disturbing another person. And your view, that sight also no good. Of course, there are a lot of visitors and kind of thing. Leave them aside, no problem. But you must understand, when and where possible, keep the object in you, view it, whether you're walking or working or sitting or whatever may be, then you are, my expression is, you are mindful and mind your own business. Sometimes this mind your own business is little harsh. But I have to tell because this is the third day. Otherwise you start relaxing. And the people, those who won't get this message, and consider this as a holiday camp, they are the people spoiling others also. So therefore, don't do it. It's a bad thing. Because it's a very precise thing. When and where you keep the primary object for longer time, so much of connections happen with the secondary objects and the changing of the same object with in terms of the mind and matter, in terms of the name and the matter. Mind and the body and the nama rupa, if you are to see them, your yesterday experience must be the stepping stone for the today's meditation. And it must gather the momentum. When that is happening, you can see if you are quick or not the quick, if you are only observe the object in the superficial way, things appear permanent. Things appear auspicious. Things appear dependable. Things appear, it is me, it is not me. But when you observe the same thing again and again, you can see they are ever changing. You never see them because you are not focused. And you are not ready to see it because your mind is always with the permanent notion. But instead, if you can look at the same thing again and again under the light of mindfulness, and when you are to see this changing nature, if you are to consider it as a negative, or if you are to consider it as something destructive, then your meditation will be sour in taste. You will never see the sweet taste in the meditation because your preparation, your preparedness is no good, not good. So therefore, while meditating, you must keep the mind open for this choiceless awareness. You must keep the mind open for evenly suspended attention. Secondary objects can happen, but secondary object can be a defilement only if you react. But instead, if you are managing to see the secondary object also as a nama rupa, or mind and the body, or name and the matter, then you know how to keep your stream of consciousness without defilement and how quickly you can come from the secondary object to the primary object. The return journey from the secondary object to the primary object, it's a very, very aesthetic thing. The day you know how to thin slice the time and understand how the wandering mind, how from the wandering mind, the mind come back to the primary object, then you know how to find the security. Whenever mind is in the wandering form, you feel insecure, doubtful, and uncertain. And at that situation, if you know I am in a doubtful situation, if I am in a entertaining doubts and dangerous and uncertain. And instead, if you know this primary object is the place for the security and no doubts, no frustration, no tension, and then later mind will naturally come back from the doubt to no doubt, uncertainty to the certainty, fearfulness to the security. When that happened, without a second person, without any formula, without any tool, you know how to secure your mind. So when and where that is happening, you understand the mindfulness has its manifestation, security. Dhammo ave rakkhati dhammachari. If you protect mindfulness, mindfulness will protect your security. If you do not protect mindfulness, there is no security. So therefore, the Buddha always mentioned the security from Dhamma or security from the spiritual life, it is not a natural gift. You have to earn it. More and more you become mindful, you will be in a certain time, you will be in the dangerous places, doubtful places, uncertain places. And now, if you are mindful, yes, I am in a uncertain place, but there is a primary object, this is my home. Way back, there's nothing hindrance, there's nothing to block you. And when you come back, you see now you find your own refuge, your own security, and that is through the mindfulness. So that is why the first and foremost thing in your spiritual life is to keep the mindfulness alert, intact, and mindfulness not make sure that you are not going to the dangerous places. Definitely you are going to the dangerous places. But even in the dangerous place, you know this is dangerous and there is a security. There is an oasis. This is the desert. So when under such circumstances, due to your more and more practice, acquaintance, whenever the mind coming from the dangerous place to the no danger, you understand that this is what the message of the Buddha. This is what you call the protection of the Dhamma. So therefore, looking whatever the phenomena happening through the lens of mind and the body, or Nama Rupa, it is not mere theoretical thing. You can't do away with theory also. You have to understand theory, but it will come into being, come into practice only when we are practicing mindfulness, and that is also never without a challenge. And whenever you understand the essence of it, you will verify that you can't borrow it from someone. You can't gain it by doing other meritorious deeds. You can't gain it by others' blessing. You can't give it to someone. Even to your dear and near one, you can't give it. Any person who wish to have this inner security, or protection of the Dhamma, he or she has to earn. The tools are the developing the mindfulness and see phenomena in terms of the Nama Rupa. It's also another way of explaining the choiceless awareness. It's also another way of explaining the evenly suspended attention. Each and every phenomena is not a unit, but at least two things, mental aspect and the physical aspect. And that mental aspects have multivarious diversification. Physical part also have a multivarious diversification. When and where you split into mentality and physicality, and when the mind is go detail along this physical shapes and the mental, this thing, you are thoroughly in the mindfulness, you can verify it, so much so you are protected. So therefore, whenever the mindfulness is defined, arakka pachupattana, it has been given, whenever you are mindful, you feel kind of a protection. It's a mental protection. Then and there you feel it. The beginner feel less. But knowing the very same thing, when you try to keep mindfulness intact for longer time, as much as possible in your all the four postures, later you feel fine. When and where you feel you are mindful, you feel a kind of protection. Whenever that protection is there, no much of entertain or doubts, no uncertainty, and you know where the refuge is, and it is within your jurisdiction. You can practice again and again, so therefore early part of mindfulness is kind of a regimentation. It's a very square in shape. It's little sour in taste. But when you learn more and more, and when you go there, it is happy like a hobby. It's more sweet in taste and very aesthetic. Whatever the danger, you know the refuge. You know the protection. And it is within your capacity. So ultimately, when you are as a person, as a being, when you are practicing, ultimately it becomes contagious. The other people also try to, others or other people also try to observe, and they find it. It is later ethically, it is spreading among the inner group. It is called in American jargon, they call good vibes. So after a certain extent, when you see a mindful person, naturally you become mindful. Not with the people talkative, not with the people very harsh. So therefore, ethically you can contribute to the group by slowly, mindfully, silently, SMS. And that is also impossible at the beginning. But later when the group action and the understanding increases, when the momentum gathers in the ethical level, each and everyone contribute to each other. So therefore, not only you are practicing your mindfulness individually, when it is gathering the momentum, it is radiating this kind of good vibes. That's why Venerable Sariputta took these issues and put into literature and epistemology, theory of knowledge, and it is not for the theory, for the sake of theory. It has its own practical value. So when we are meditating, we have to listen to them. We are meditating, we have to put into practice. And more you put into practice, you are reification, you are verifying the same thing. So ultimately, after 2,600 years, we are again and again referring to the same scripture. Of course, the interpretation is somewhat changing, maybe. Whatever may be, the purpose is being served. So therefore, when and where you are mindful, when and where you verify that I am mindful, your task is to look into the body and be here and now and see the phenomena under your very nose, then and there, at least in terms of mentality and physicality, rather than likings and disliking. Whenever you give up likings and disliking and take mentality and physicality as your criterion, then least amount of friction can happen, least amount of frustration can happen, least amount of tension can happen, and with the accumulation of that good quality only you can perceive it. At the beginning it is not so, but since we have done 2-3 days of meditation, I thought by now you may start to feel this accumulation. So may you all be mindful, may you all be present in the here now I am, and try to understand this mentality and physicality or nama rupa, so that you may make the meditation more sweet in taste rather than the sour taste. With that remark, I would like to sum up today's talk. Thank you very much for your listening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.